sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Employment gains buoy markets. China's eco slows, but there's a good side because the government has a surprise. Here we go, consolidation in the oil patch. All this and much more on episode number 412 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, lots going on. Andrew Horowitz here, and a little bit late on the production of this episode, but that was good because we got lots more information that we found out that we can actually use to help our investing and information about what to do, not only this week, but into the future with markets. So I don't know where to begin because there are a lot of things that are happening here. There is more central bank activity. There's more consolidation. There's more news that you have to scratch your head over, that some stocks are, which I would call stick saves and Hail Marys to get things going when it comes to their stock price after they have disappointed pretty significantly with their quarterly earnings. Speaking of quarterly earnings, you know, it's interesting. We did some looking at what is actually happening with the quarterly earnings for the S&P 500. Now, oftentimes you see anywhere from, let's call it 65% to 80% wide range, but a 65% to 80% range of stocks that actually beat estimates on a regular basis on the EPS. This is from the S&P 500. On the revenue front, it's been a bit more disappointing. We've seen that on the revenue front, somewhere between maybe, I'll give you a range, 55 to 65% of companies have beat on revenues. One of the consistent items that we have been watching over the last few years is the fact that share buybacks, of course, have done their job at enhancing the earnings or the bottom line, but you can't do anything about your revenue at all, especially when you have some headwinds like a global slowdown, ex-US to a degree, the dollar rising in value. Things of that nature don't help, obviously, the revenues. What you can do, though, is you can cut costs. You can do share buybacks. There's a variety of things that you could do to help the bottom line, not to mention creative accounting. There's all sorts of creative accounting methodologies and footnotes and things that you can do to help the bottom line. But when it comes to the top line, the revenue growth, it's important. At the end of the day, it's the profitability of the company that really matters the most, right? Who cares if, let's say you're a company and you're earning $1 million a year and you have $1 million of expenses, you're not making any money. Over the next number of years, you figure out some way to cut your expenses and to accentuate the net profits. So what you do is you do a bunch of stuff and all of a sudden, you know what? Now your expenses are only, let's say, $500,000. Well, your profitability rises. You have $500,000 of profits. Well, fast forward a couple of years and still your revenue is $1 million, but now your profitability rises somehow because you're doing well. And now you have $750,000 of profitability. Anyway, the point is that the earnings are the more important factor of this if they are clean, good earnings. Now, we can't say that, really. There's no way to say that because a lot of the enhancements to earnings recently have been the incredible amount of share buybacks that have gone on. We talked about this. I'm just going to hit this for a second here because there's some new studies that came out to talk about this. And I thought it was really interesting at the actual numbers that we saw through Bernini Associates. So because they're commenting that because corporations and large corporations are still awash with cash, they are continuing to do nothing more really than buying back their shares. Now, they're not doing any capital expenditures or enhancements otherwise. Large corporations authorized the record amount of $141 billion of buybacks during April, the highest amount announced in any month, according to Bernini, who tracks this kind of stuff. $141 billion of authorizations of buybacks during April. Now, a lot of that was during earnings season. We saw that there was the earnings that would come out, the expectations that they would give you through guidance, and then the announcement before or after of a dividend hike, possibly, and maybe even share buybacks. That all came out during earnings season. Now, the big thing here is that that is helping the net earnings. Still, when we look at the overall numbers of how things are going and exactly what's happening with regard to the earnings season, we started out with about 67% of companies, when only a few of the S&P 500 reported, 67% of companies were beating expectations. And recently, what we've seen is as time has been going on over the earnings season, that fewer and fewer companies are able to actually beat expectations, even though this was significantly revised lower in terms of expectations. Don't forget, over the last quarter or so, maybe a month or two back, analysts had been dropping down their expectations dramatically. We saw that there was probably about an 8% swing from where they thought expectations were going to be for earnings to where they actually were right before earnings came out by a company. Major, major downgrades went on. Companies, of course, beat by a small amount. They did a good job at guiding analysts to the right place so they could just beat by a little bit. But from the beginning of the time when the S&P started announcing, each company started announcing their earnings, we were about 65 to 67% of companies were beating estimates. It has slowly gotten down to only about 61% of companies that are now beating estimates. So a lot slower and a lot more concerning overall. I think that's an interesting situation. Now, we see that before because the way that the earnings season is stacked, how what companies come first, etc. But the more recent issues, when we saw that social media stocks have been really taking a hit, so what happened with Twitter, Yelp, LinkedIn, I mean, really big problems in some of that space. And I do think, and I talked about this on a podcast with Frank Curzio late last week. If you haven't caught that, go over to frankcurzio.com, go over to iTunes, grab that podcast. We spent about an hour talking about a lot of these details and a few different things. Matter of fact, we talked about I think that was Tuesday or Wednesday. I was fetching about what is with this Shake Shack? Why are the stocks continuing to go higher? Why are we seeing such a ridiculous valuation of the stock? It makes no sense. I'm sure it wasn't because I said this, but the stock cratered about 15 or 18% the next 2 days on no reason that I found. I didn't see any particular news. Earnings were coming out in, about a week or so from now. Okay, coming up very soon. I don't know if it was in advance of that. People were squaring up their positions or what was going on exactly. Maybe some insiders were selling. Bottom line, stock really took a nice hit. We also talked about a few other things. We talked about Lumber Liquidators. Lumber Liquidators, if you remember, I talked about this stock. This stock also took a hit after its earnings. Sales were down pretty good. They're also announcing that they're pulling their Chinese and I believe all of their laminates, at least temporarily, from all their stores. Now, this is good and bad. It's bad because it's an admission that something is not right. Or at least it's an admission that, you know what, we can't fight consumers worrying about the fact that we have something that's maybe not right, if it's true or not, or even if there is higher levels of formaldehyde inside of the laminate products, we just don't want to deal with this. So it's a negative because it's an admission of that. The positive is, well, the company's doing something about this, aren't they? You know, they're admitting that something is not right, even though they were absolutely, absolutely 100% saying, hey, you know what? There's nothing wrong with what we're doing. But now the company has caved in a bit, and maybe this is the start of something bigger. Where are they going to actually try to change up where they're provisioning their materials from, or getting their materials from, acquiring them from, and what areas maybe they're going to keep it in the U.S., maybe they're going to switch where they're working with China, maybe they're going to figure out what's going on with the particular factories. They'll take a hit. They'll probably do a write-down on any of the lumber and any of the store. There's a big issue. Any of the materials that they're going to junk or sell or do something with, and that will probably be a one-time item, which sometimes shareholders like that because it's a one-time issue. Just write it off. You get a nice tax deduction. You can expense it out. But the big question is going to be what's going to happen in the future with the company. There's some investigation going on potentially. But the company's trying to get ahead of this now. I'm not a big fan of them. I think it's an interesting trade. That's all. But Shake Shack, I'm not a big fan of at all from the aspect of its financials. Now, the burgers may be the best in the world. Shakes may be terrific. Just everything about them may be the best, you know, food place in the whole world. But just in terms of a stock right now, their price is a little bit ahead of them. Okay. What else do we see here? I saw some other interesting things that I wanted to share with you. There was an interesting link that I got on Twitter from C. Ramesh. It was an article that was called The Unintended Consequences of Banning Smoking in New Orleans. And we discussed this a little bit on DH Unplugged last week. And the whole idea of, you know, you're banning smoking in bars in New Orleans. And isn't bars kind of a place where people go to drink and smoke and hang out and play pool and throw darts? But what's the story with the banning of smoking? Maybe I can understand if this whole thing about not combining any kind of smoking with food products. And I guess I can kind of move this into the whole idea of, well, alcohol drinks are consumed, so it could be considered food. But at the same time, it's not food. It's okay. But okay, all right, if that's where they're going with this. But then I started thinking about this. This is a bad idea. Now, the article goes on to say some very interesting things. It talks about how now there's big problems. What's happening is, matter of fact, I have the article here. Let me check this out. What's happening is that all of a sudden, they're moving from the bars outside. This guy, it seems, this is some information from some blogger, but it talks about he goes to this particular bar, the Snake and Jake's, and before the smoking ban was enacted, used to be packed inside on Thursdays, Fridays, Saturday nights. Now, when he went in the other night, this guy, all the people that used to be inside were standing on the sidewalk and in the street. There were two fights in front of the residents' houses, one knocking down a wrought iron fence. Outside the front door, it was loud because drunk people were yelling constantly. Smoke is everywhere, broken bottles and cigarette butts covering the ground. And some people were pulling up with their car and playing music. I guess they moved the whole entire bar outside. Now, that's okay because now you're not allowed to smoke inside, the smoking outside. But a lot of the people that weren't smoking moved outside also because the party seemed to be outside. Bigger problem was that people weren't drinking as much. Bar was losing all sorts of revenue. The neighborhood was getting all sorts of noise pollution and garbage thrown around and all sorts of problems there. And the whole plan seems to have backfired a bit. Now, I don't understand what New Orleans was thinking about this in terms of why they were doing this, you know, as opposed to being politically correct. Maybe it would be better to have bars that are considered smoking and those bars that are considered not smoking, right? Have a bar if the owner decides, hey, we want this to be a smoking bar. Okay, well, that's fine. That's their idea. If the non-smokers don't like it, they can go to the bar that the owner says, hey, this is a non-smoking bar. I think that was probably there. Anyway, the article went on and on about this. I thought it was really interesting about the unintended consequences. This is very similar to the discussion of many of the governmental actions that we do see on a regular basis that have unintended consequences that we may see immediately. Like, this is pretty quick. This is an example. We did see that there was this unintended consequences of this particular move. Again, unrelated to finance just in a way, but of course it is something that really sparks the interest of, hey, what is it that we have to watch for and be careful of? For example, what, just going back one step here, what are the unintended consequences of companies buying back all the shares, using the capital, not for capital expenditures, but really just buying back shares? What's the unintended consequences of, let's say, Obamacare? What's the unintended consequences of some of these trade deals that are going on? Or, you know, the sanctions on Russia, or even allowing Iran to reduce sanctions on their nuclear, et cetera. These things we need to start thinking about. We need to start waking up to this because I think we are, as a people, not you, not me maybe, but others are being very complacent about a lot of this, and particularly in finance. What are the unintended consequences of us just bidding up stocks without regard to what the valuation is and where does that go? It doesn't end well. Now, not for all stocks, but for those stocks that we're bidding up to levels that are really not right. Now, that's what makes a market. Of course it does. It's our job to figure out where those inefficiencies are and where those price irregularities really stand. So keep our eyes open for that. I think it's going to be very interesting to watch. But thanks for that tweet over there. Oh, you could reach me, by the way, Andrew Horowitz. That's my Twitter handle, one word, just Andrew Horowitz. Make sure to sign up for Periscope. We may try to do a little bit of a live stream audio on Periscope. If you haven't checked that out, go to the App Store. If you have an iPhone, click Periscope. It's a Twitter app. You basically could follow me. And then when we come on live on Tuesday night, about 10 o'clock or so, we're going to try to see how this works. If it doesn't work, we're just not going to do it again. But you'll be able to hear us live instead of hearing the recording of DH Unplugged. So just download that. All right, what else do we got? All right, we saw some of the situation in China. Well, China's central bank on Sunday cut interest rates for the third time since November in a bid to boost a sluggish economy. So the People's Bank of China said it was cutting its lending rate by about 0.25%. And this action follows two moves this year already to let commercial banks lend more of their deposits to struggling companies. You know, so companies aren't doing well. So what do? Maybe they didn't do a good job of underwriting, lending. They don't have enough money. So what do? We say, hey, you know what? Here's some more money. Lend some more out. You're doing such a horrible job and you're failing at it. So we want to make sure that somehow you do more of that. And we're going to let you lend it out to crappy companies out there because they need money. Makes all the sense in the world to me, doesn't it? The world's second largest economy also posted slow growth. Recently, economists have been calling for the central bank to act more aggressively in reducing borrowing costs, which they did for the nation's companies as they grapple with a kind of a weak demand at home, a slumping real estate market, and flagging export orders. So again, what they do is they have the slumping real estate market. Why? They overbuilt like all hell. And what they're doing is reducing the reserve requirements. It makes no sense. In other words, they're reducing the amount of money that banks have to keep in reserves against their loans so they can loan more money to add to the slumping real estate market because of overbuilding. I don't know about you, but somehow this doesn't work. The equation seems to be like an epic study in failed economics as well as nonsensical approach to trying to boost anything but the liquidity in markets for somehow, which may be, you know, going right into the stock markets. Have we seen the Shanghai Shenzhen Hang Seng moving up dramatically every time? I mean, they've done a lot of moves in China over the last 6 months, we'll call it. So economic growth in the first quarter in China, we know, came in at 7% for GDP, which was okay, but the slowest pace for China in 6 years. We saw that recently their various ISMs were slowing. Their inflation has been just, you know, okay, in good shape, you know, nothing to worry about. But the interesting thing is that we're seeing that the, you know, basically every economic indicator, industrial profits, manufacturing, the services industry was okay. That was a decent number. Import-export numbers, horrible, just absolutely terrible. And by, you know, doing all the stimulus is really not going to help them a lot because, you know, with the high dollar that we've seen here, you know, and we're not seeing massive exports, and the imports and exports dropped off a cliff down, what, 15, 16% in dollar terms over the last several quarters? I mean, very bad. Very, very bad. So I'm not exactly sure how their particular stimulus packages or actions are going to help some of the areas that have these problems. They need to clean up their act more so than trying to push more in the same direction. I mean, they're just piling more crap on crap here. So I'm still, you know, while the immediate response by markets is euphoria, and we're seeing that incredible amounts of individuals are opening up accounts, leverage they're allowing to run like all hell, I think they're making a big mistake, and they're doing a lot of this on borrowing. If just, you know, we should talk about this. They're allowing banks to lend more money. Margin accounts are historically high leverage margin levels in China. Go on and on with what they're doing. It's all about borrowing. And, you know, where you have borrowing that isn't good and there's a lot of loan defaults and things like that, why are you adding to it instead of trying to make it higher quality and clean up your act a little bit? Because you're inevitably going to end up in a really bad situation. So, interesting there. Now, employment we did see in the U.S. last week on Friday, as a matter of fact, did better. A little bit better than expected through the official employment number. The unemployment rate went to 5.4% from 5.5%. Interesting, though, that they did revise down the previous month from 129,000 about to 89,000. And so we saw a little bit of choppiness there, and we added about 225,000 to the payrolls in the latest month. Here's a thought. I was thinking about this because it's kind of difficult to look backwards, right, with all these revisions that go on. So we went from 129 down to 89, which if we saw that 89,000 print initially, if it was correct, not revised, not the 129, but 89, there'd be a lot of concern about what's going on with employment, if there's a change in things, if the oil industry really is laying off that many people, retail, what's going on there, construction, etc. I was thinking, wouldn't it be better to do some kind of an averaging instead of taking the revision and moving it backwards where nobody cares about the past number? I mean, you look at a, you know, a situation and say, oh, we're revising data from 6 months ago, a one-time revision, and it's a lot lower than we thought, but now we're okay, so don't worry about it. You know, it's kind of like that could work both ways, and I really don't think it's a beneficial thing to do just to revise your previous. Why not do something like just add or subtract the revision to the most recent number, to the current number? Just roll it in. Or maybe credit half of it back to the old number and half to the current number. This way, maybe we'll get a more standardized way of looking at things. Now, of course, what we could do very easily is just look at an average over the last, let's say, 3 months, 6 months. Well, what's the average? What's going on there, right? So over the last couple of months, we can see that if we take the 89,229,000, we're talking about 157,000 over the last 2 months. Still a lot lighter than has been in terms of trend, but still a decent number. And of course, the 5.4% is what a lot of people were focusing in on. Now, I think we have to spend a little bit of time talking about what happened recently in some of the social media and a couple other stocks from both the aspect of what happened with earnings and right after that. Now, we saw that Twitter and LinkedIn, Whole Foods, a few others really didn't do very well. We saw that Yelp, Zulily, just terrible numbers and really, really poor reaction to it. The reaction was probably even more intense in terms of the stocks falling dramatically than the numbers, because, you know, obviously a lot of these ran up for some time. But two of them I want to talk about, one in particular. It has to be called a Hail Mary. You know, you saw Yelp came out with their numbers. They were slowing down, all sorts of problems there. Stock dropped 20-something percent or so. Really just got crushed after their earnings number came out. And what I thought was really fascinating about this was that after that, the next day, the very next day, Yelp announces that they're looking possibly for strategic alternatives or maybe even to sell themselves. Whoa, wait a minute. You come out with these earnings and they're pretty negative, and then a day later, you're going to sell yourself? Wow, that's kind of interesting. So the stock drops 20-something percent, and then all of a sudden, wow, you're going to sell yourself. You're thinking about this. Now, why would a company do something like that? Right? Here's a couple of ideas. First, probably what we can discern from this is that things are much worse behind the scenes of Yelp than they're letting on to. Something, obviously, we didn't see very good numbers overall from their earnings. And without getting into all the details, I think the bigger picture here that we have to look at is that not only were things bad now, but the company is a little bit nervous about what they see in the future due to competition, due to trends of advertising. There's something going on at Yelp that really is a problem, where the company not only missed, not only guided poorly, but also, more importantly, they came out with an announcement the very next day that, hey, you know what? Okay, we give in. We're looking to sell ourselves. The second thing that could be, and somebody brought this up on some emails to me. You can always email me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com, is that possibly people on the inside are freaking out a little bit that their shares have dropped so much and they want to keep the share price up. Well, why not just put out some kind of a news item, some kind of a, hey, you know what? Maybe we're going to sell ourselves. Keep that in the back of the minds of investors so they're not going to sell shares off. And then so what they do is they simply will, worry about that. Short sellers will get out and all. Now, you did see the shares pop dramatically on the news. But I did a little bit of digging on this. I want to find out more about this. Here's something interesting that I think we should look at when it comes to Yelp. It seems that the CEO and the COO are selling plenty of shares. As a matter of fact, every week on some sort of maybe even possibly a regular planned sale basis, Jerry Stoppelman, who's the CEO, sells about 8,000 stock options that turn into shares and then sells them each and every week. Depending on the price of it, it could be anywhere from $300,000 to about $700,000 per week of sales of Yelp stock. So the CEO has possibly a planned sale that's going on. So we're not going to say he just sold in front of anything. So he has a planned sale going on of about 8,000 stock options. And again, and if you look at the numbers, it's about $300,000 to $500,000 or $700,000 a week, depending on the share price. The same thing is going on with the COO and the CFO. They're not as regular, the chief financial officer and chief operating officer, not as standard, not as regular selling, but still pretty regular, okay, selling this off. Now, let's kind of think about this for a second. Here we go. I'm the CEO. I'm dumping shares. I'm the CEO. Get into a meeting. Hey, guys, dude, things aren't good. you know what? We just put a bad earnings number up. I don't know what's going on with the future. Shares are down plenty. We're trying to sell this stuff and get ourselves out of this deal. What can we do to boost the share price up? Because, you know, right now there's a lot of loss of confidence in what we're doing and a lot of loss of confidence in the company. We're probably going to get downgraded by analysts. We need to do something serious so that we can boost the share price up, because if not, we're just going to be part of the selling that's going on, pressuring the shares down. What can we do? Hey, I know. Why don't we say we're going to put ourselves up for sale? You know, we don't have to be absolute. We don't have to accept anything, but just put it out there and say that we are, because what the heck? We could be doing that. Who knows? There's not anything illegal about saying that we're looking at that. Internally, we're looking at the potential for a sale. That will kind of squeeze the short sellers. That will squeeze any of the people that were thinking about selling the stock, because, you know, the whole idea, if we sell the shares, it's going to be probably at a premium, blah, 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 blah. Brilliant, boys. But I got to tell you something. That gives me even less confidence in the company, even more concern that there's something going on. But at the same time, of course, the potential for a sale is there. Now, we saw that company Zulily actually had a really poor earnings number, and the stock is just cratered. Well, Alibaba, who owns a stake in it, a day later increased their stake, so shares will pop it on that. So we're seeing that there is a lot of Hail Mary stick saves going on in the markets. I think that's pretty interesting. And I think that is something that we have to watch right now, that the news that is coming out from companies, especially when they are missing their numbers, et cetera, is pretty, I would keep an eye on that. What's the news after an earnings miss that is going to really move the needle? A couple of the quick topics I want to talk about. What do we have coming up in the economics front this week? Give us a few things, nothing really impressive. A couple of things that are probably important. We'll post this actually on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Over on the show notes for this episode, there's going to be a chart that will show you the trading impact, what particular economic report will be coming out, what the forecast is and consensus and things like that. What do we got? Let's see. Tuesday, a couple things. Treasury budget, JOLTS, job openings. Not important. Wednesday, though, the 13th, we have retail sales coming out. That's going to be somewhat important. We're going to see an expectation of about plus 0.2. Which will be a reduction from the last month compared to the month before. So 0.2%. Ex-auto, we'll see about 0.4. Export prices, import prices, and business inventories also that day. Those all together will tell us a little bit more about what's going on with the economy and how GDP is going to fare. We'll look at that. Also, PPI coming out on Thursday. All eyes will be on that because the bond market, of course, has been starting to get a little grumpy. Have you noticed that TLT, TBT, and other bond instruments? And if you haven't noticed, German bonds are selling off like crazy. The Bund has gone from something like 0.05 to 0.5 in a matter of weeks. That's a pretty substantial move when you talk about bonds. Anyway, PPI, the producer price index, very important for markets. You'll see that and initial claims on Thursday. And then Friday, we'll wrap it up with the May Michigan Sentiment Index, capacity utilization, industrial production. Those will be somewhat important, but of course, sentiment will be important as well. We saw that last week, the consumer confidence number that came out on Tuesday, which is the government's reading, not the Michigan, was a little bit less than anticipated. Still pretty good, though, but we'll see how that plays out. And finally, let's just look at something off my list of things to talk about. Oh, no. I think we need to talk about, we definitely need to talk about what's going on in oil. We saw that there's a deal being done by Nabors Industries buying Rosetta Resources, and I thought I would mention a couple things about this. It's interesting, something that we talked about for some time, that there'll be a consolidation in the area of some of the frackers, shale drillers, and other related oil sector companies, as they're having a lot of problems due to the fact that oil prices have come down so dramatically. Now, with that, I was thinking, well, what other companies could be similar to that and would see at least some sympathy moves on the upside or other opportunities? So just a quick list. This is not all-encompassing. A few things that you need to put on your watch list. I would take a look at Whiting Petroleum, symbol WLL, Oasis Petroleum, OAS, Continental Resources, to a lesser degree, CLR, Pioneer Natural Resources, PXD. We talked about this on the Curzio podcast that I was on this week at length after Greenlight's Einhorn came out with a short thesis on this. What's interesting about this now is that if his short thesis is correct or incorrect, now we have news that there is consolidation actually coming. About 3-4 months ago, I had talked about this. We were going to wait to find when it's going to start starting to percolate, because when it does, many of these stocks may get a bid under it. So Pioneer Natural Resources, which is a pretty good sell over the last number of days, I think could be interesting to watch. I am not disagreeing with Greenlight. I'm not saying that his thesis is wrong. All I'm saying is the potential for a pop due to the fact that now we have a deal in a similar sector, which is actually, when you look at Rosetta Resources, they're more in the Texas area, the Permian Basin, as well as the Eagle Ford. But that's in Texas. So take a look at that. Also look at Laredo, LPI. I think that's what will be interesting. So you got Whiting, Oasis, Continental Resources, Pioneer, and Laredo. I'll put those symbols on the show notes as well for this particular episode. And then finally, I want to talk about something we've talked about for some time, the whole idea that volume on markets has been waning. And the question is, why is that? We talked about this in and out a few times. There will be a chart up on the Disciplined Investor show notes for this episode again that shows you the monthly average or the monthly volume of all traded markets, okay? And it will show you how when we multiply the amount of shares times the price per shares, and you take the whole combination of money actually being moving throughout the markets, how much there is in trading. Better than just shares traded, because as the share price goes up, maybe less shares are trading because they're more expensive, but you're spending more money on them in total. Now, there's a lot of dips you'll see on this chart, and the dips are obviously the end of the year because this is a monthly chart. But take a look at the yellow line on that chart and take a look how the 12-month average is actually sloping up, and we are seeing more and more volume in terms of the total market value, dollar value of the entirety of trading picking up. So it kind of takes that whole, oh, volume is slipping, et cetera, on the exchanges, and puts that to sleep a little bit because there's more money that's moving in and around. Anyway, we're going to wrap it up early today due to the fact that a long weekend with family, some fishing, some golf, Mother's Day and all that. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. And we'll have lots more to come in the next episode. Make sure to tune in to DH Unplugged this week. Follow me on Periscope, Twitter, and make sure to check out the show notes for this episode. Thanks again for joining me. We'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.
Is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.